This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, this hour we're going to be digging deeper, as we usually do, with one special person. And that special person today is particularly special because he's the man who started this radio station. He's our member number one and our founder, John Oliver. And he chose, don't blame me, he chose that last piece of music, which certainly took me back to my childhood. I do remember it well. But John, why did you pick that particular one?
Well, I picked because it was the start of me being interested in radio, I suppose.
Yeah.
I was only about 9 or 10, but my mother actually took me shopping. My father had passed away, and she took me down to Coles at the time, Coburg, and she said, "I know what we'll buy you. We know that you like Doggy in the Window." So she bought the 78 version of Doggy in the Window. So that's telling you how old I am these days.
I remember 78s.
Yeah. But it's a significant song over the years, actually, for me. And I like songs that are a little bit cheery and lyricky and a little bit different, like a lot of things in my life.
That was actually, I mean, there were an awful lot of songs like that around in the 50s, weren't there?
Yeah, there was.
What you might call almost novelty songs, I suppose.
Yes.
And they were actually, before people like the Beatles and that came along, they were kind of like the staple of the what was then called the hit parade.
Yes, that's right.
And as you say, they were on big, heavy 78s.
That's right.
Of which I think I still have a few, can you believe, tucked away. Some, I have no idea what's on them. They might even be my grandmother's, but they go back quite a long way. John, welcome back to your radio station.
Thank you very much.
It's nice to see you in the studio again.
It's everybody's radio station. Let's correct you there, Doug.
Well, you played a very special role in it, and we'll come to how you came to do that as we go along. But I want to go right back to the beginning. You did a little bit for us there. You mentioned about being going down to Coles and buying the 78. But let's take you back to your childhood. Whereabouts were you born?
Coburg.
Right, so you're a Melbourne
Sacred
boy.
Sacred Heart Hospital.
So you're a Melbourne boy through
yep.
and through.
Mm-hmm.
And what about your parents? What were they like?
My mother was fantastic. She carried the family through for 50, 60 years, and she died when she was 83. But my father passed away when I was a very young child. I was only 11, and I found him on the floor of the bathroom myself, and I was only 8 at the time with a stroke.
Ooh, that must have been quite traumatic for you.
It was, actually. At the time when that happened, Dad and I had a really good relationship, and I remember vaguely different things that happened, and I was reading on my... I've typed a few things up on the computer over the last few years, and this history of when I was... my dad was with me was very interesting. I found him on the floor, collapsed. They said he wouldn't last for 24 hours. It was a major stroke in the main artery to the brain. He did last for another 3 years, but of course all his left side was not there, and he couldn't speak properly at all. And it was pretty serious and pretty heavy at that time because there's no pensions, none of that sort of stuff that you have today.
So that was definitely a struggle for your mother.
A very big struggle for Mum, because my younger brother was only 6 months old at the time when this all happened.
There's just the two of you in the family?
No, three. I've got an older brother, Raymond, and a younger brother, Russell. So it's an interesting life that I've had. And of course I then, a year later, I went into my father sitting in the lounge room at Coburg and sat down with him, and he sort of smiled at me and pointed to his left leg and said, and didn't say anything but moved it, and I thought, I'm the first one to see this. And I was rather shocked that this happened. So I rushed out to my mother and told her to come in and see what Dad's doing. And then a couple of other things. He started walking then. They got him up and got him walking.
Because we didn't know about the rehabilitation that was possible in those days, did we? Now we make people get up and we make people walk. We can rewire pathways in the brain by giving people tasks. And
that's right.
But we didn't know anything about that did we?
No, nothing like that at that stage. And, of course, all the family, all my brothers and myself, are prone, very much prone to having a stroke because we've got factor five in our bloods. And it's very rare that three of us would have it, but the whole family seems to be getting it and having it. And that we say that that's what's the cause of Dad having a stroke at the time.
So how old would he have been at the time?
He was 42.
Which is quite young to have a stroke. I do know people who've had them at very young ages.
Oh, yeah, I know that too.
But it's not common.
No.
Unless you've got some kind of predisposition. What sort of work did he do?
He had his own business. So it worked with stainless steel, made the sinks, made Ford covers for the number plates and all sorts of other stainless steel things, manufacturer and designer and all that sort of thing.
And so did this mean your mother had to go out to work?
Mum did some part-time work. We were very lucky. My grandmother lived next door to us, and she was my father's mother, and she used to look after us when Mum went out to work overnight, waitering and working with a food and all that sort of thing. She worked, she had a job that I can vaguely remember, but she enjoyed herself. But it was a struggle, certainly a big struggle for her.
Right. Well, let's move on a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your schooling. How was your school days?
Difficult.
Why?
Where do I start with it? I remember in state school at the time, I was not an excellent reader, put it that way. And I always had trouble putting it all together. And I was made to stand up by the headmaster of the school and the teacher in front of all the class and made to read. And, of course, that's the worst thing you can do to John Oliver. Even today, it's the worst thing you can do. It's best just for me to walk in, do it, and walk out again, and I'm fine now. Right. And then
Is this a kind of dyslexia we're talking about?
It is a dyslexia problem. And what happened, because I didn't do it properly, I was dragged down to the headmaster's office and given the strap several times.
This is not enlightened child rearing, is it?
No, it isn't. And of course, my father had only just died too, I was not coping as a child, not very well. And of course, all of this on top of that. Then I went home and I told my mother about it. Well, she went up and she didn't come down. And she went and told him, well, I'm truly off.
Yeah. So, and sometimes that doesn't help, because, I mean, I was bullied at school and my mother sort of went charging in there. And in the long run, that actually made things worse.
Yes, but the thing is that
He can't stand up for himself. He's got to get his mother in to do it.
A teacher shouldn't be bullying, especially the headmaster.
No, especially not. So so were you picked on generally at school then, or was it
because you stood out? No, I wasn't out at that stage.
Or did you just try very hard to blend in?
I tried very hard. I was blending in at state school and working with everyone at state school. Then I went to Coburg Technical School, where, you know, John, go and do a technical course. You know, you'll be able to do that. You most likely can cope with all that sort of thing. But no, John didn't need to do that. John didn't want to do that. John had this idea that he wanted to be involved with radio. He had this idea that he wanted to spin the records and have a good time behind a microphone.
Why did you suddenly pick on, where did radio come from?
Well, as I said, the record that we just played with Patty Page, it seemed to trigger something off with me that all I wanted to do was be involved with records and music and announcing, and I had this thing, this bug, that I just had to do it. And it was really, really quite nerve-wracking at the time, and up until about 17 years ago, even earlier, I had this bug, but we'll get up to that there. But the bug has now quietened down.
It's quietened down. Is that like a fair bit of exercise over
Yes,
the
it
years?
Has. Yes, yes, yes.
So, well, we'll come on to your radio school days and how you started to get into radio in just a moment, but I think we'll have another piece of music first. Now, this is something of a classic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. A good old standard. The Lady is a Tramp, but this is the Glee version.
That's right.
Do you like Glee?
I love them. I reckon they're really good. It's good TV because it's not cops and robbers or solicitors or medical. And a bit of music always brightens everyone up.
It's interesting that it's kind of almost single-handedly putting a boost behind the musical theatre genre.
That's right.
Isn't it? Even though it's actually not that wonderful as musical theatre, but it's sort of trying to make a genre all of its own, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's sadly lacking on TV. We should have a little bit more variety, and I'd like to see more variety shows back on TV because I think that's what we all need, be cheered up, and instead of having cops and robbers running around shooting each other. And
well, I'm certainly at one with you there. I was only thinking the other day, if only we could take all the legal, police, medical shows off air, there'd be nothing left the way things are at the moment, apart from reality television, and I'm not going there. Any particular reason why this particular song, though?
It's one of my favourite tracks, one of my favourite tunes over the years that I've always liked. And when I bought the CD a few weeks ago, I thought, gee, that's really good. I like that. They did it really, really well, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay, so here from Glee is Lady is a Tramp.
She gets too hungry for dinner at 8.
And this is Doug Pollard, digging deeper this hour with the founder of Joy Melbourne, John Oliver, and a very lively version of Lady is a Tramp from
Wonderful.
Glee there, yes. Had a look to see which character it was doing the lead there. It was Puck, our punky friend with who claims he can get hold of any woman in the show, and so far seems to be doing quite well at it. Anyway, going back in time again, radio school. What's a radio school?
Well, the school...
This is my radio school.
Lee Murray. It was Lee Murray Radio School, School for Radio, that Bert Newton, Philip Brady, and quite a lot of other well-known people went to. And my mother took me off to 3XY many years ago to find out where I could get involved with radio. And they suggested that I go and see Lee Murray and sit down and have a bit of a chat with him. And they got me into radio school with Lee Murray for 3 years.
3 years? That's a long time. What did you learn?
I learned how to ad-lib. I learned how to read a sponsorship or a commercial. But nowadays it's totally changed because you used to have to put your radio voice on, you know, and all that sort of thing. Now you're just more natural
than anything else. Yeah. It's very strange when you're working with somebody, as I have done a couple of times here at Joy, who has a radio voice that suddenly appears when you switch the mics on.
Mine can do it. I just do it sometimes, and it's mainly if I have to do a special announcement or some sort of sponsorship.
If you're doing a sponsorship announcement or something like that, that's a different thing. But well, I don't really DJ. I just introduce the odd bit of music while I get my breath in between talking to people, because that's the point of the show. But radio school, did this actually help you to get a job in radio?
No, because I had this problem with the reading, and no one could seem to sort it out how for me to cope with it.
Right.
And I was never really confident enough to take it on fully. But I met my first love.
Well, you had to get something out of it.
And that sort of mucked things up a bit. I met him, and for 10 years I was with Barry, and I decided to sort of just stay away from the whole thing because it was all a bit bitchy at the time, and very, very very dramatic. and I just couldn't cope with that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. it was just something I just decided that I would give it a rest for a little while.
Mm.
So that was what happened there. And I started as...
But the bug never left you, obviously.
No. The bug never left you, left me, I should say, until... it left a little while over that period, and then I sort of started fiddling around with getting turntables together and doing music and doing things again while we were living down at Rosebud. And I set up a little setup down there. But prior to that, in my earlier years, I set up a whole radio station at the Coburg Technical School.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our own little programs. It was one of the first radio stations in the schools at the time, and that was quite a few years ago.
So this is not broadcast radio. This
no, just around the school.
This is just around the school. It's a bit like hospital radio. You have school radio. Yeah,
wires. Not transmitter. Landline, for a better way of putting it.
Yeah. School radio.
Mm.
Now, I've never been to a school where they had a school radio.
Lunchtime, we used to play all the different popular tunes and different information that was going on in the school and talking about.
So what, you had like loudspeakers all over the school?
Yes. Use the PA system to put it through.
Right. So it was a bit like living in North Korea.
A little bit, yes.
Because, this is something I've only ever seen in movies or on Simpsons cartoons, where you have a PA system throughout the whole school. I went to some very old-fashioned English schools where we didn't have all this kind of technology built in there.
Well, we had it there.
So you had loudspeakers in all the classrooms?
Yes. It went all through, but it was only ever happening, as I said, lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people got involved and a lot of people liked it and thoroughly enjoyed it.
And did that also act as a kind of... bug transmitter for some people who were interested in radio?
Yes, it did. It did get a lot of people involved. And it was just something that's come back to me just quickly. I had started Joy, and it was about 2 years or 3 years into it, and all these fellas turned up from nowhere. And they were all gay, and they all came from the same school and the same class that I was involved in when I was at Coburg Tech, and even from state school. And they knew who I was and everything with the radio and everything.
Yeah.
And they wanted to sort of catch up with me again. So that was quite interesting. That was good. Yeah, I was sort of like blown away. But it was only about the third year of Joy, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you know they were gay at the time?
No, not at all. No.
One thing we haven't talked about at all is, was there a coming out somewhere in the midst of all this?
Yes. I knew I was gay when I was 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't say anything to my mother because I loved her dearly. And in those years, you sort of you had to watch what you did. But not me. I used to get into all sorts of trouble. But we won't go there.
Why not? It sounds like that might be interesting.
When I was 19, I had a choice of either telling my mother or leaving the state. So I decided that no one tells me what to do, stubborn John Oliver, and I told my mother. She was shattered. She was going to leave her new husband at the time and break it off and look after me. This is what she said. I've got to send you off to a psychiatrist. I went off to the token psychiatrist just to sort of please her. And I realised that there was no turning back, and I sat down and I spoke to the psychiatrist at the time about it all, and he said, well, you've got your head screwed on, right? You'll be okay. So it basically, I left home at that stage and went and lived with Barry for 10 years. So it sort of worked in well, and Mum stayed with her husband at the time, and everything was honky-dory.
But you did. You obviously reconnected with your mother.
Oh, yes, yes.
It
was only a temporary thing, only like a week or 2 weeks. But it was right on Christmas time. I was, I was 19. And there was lots of tears, lots of upsets and lots of stuff, which I thought at the time, it shouldn't be like this. And this was some of the seeds when I look back for Joy and about Joy now. This is what Joy is about, to make the parents also realise that, you know, it's happened, you've got to live with it, get on with it, don't chastise your child, look after them, cuddle them and love them. Mum did love me, but she had a different funny way at times.
Well, I think, you know, in that era, it was considered something so terribly, terribly shameful that it was a big shock to parents when one came out. I mean, I had a similar experience to yours where, you know, my mother sort of cried and said, well, so long as you're happy. And my father said, do you want to see a doctor? You know, which is pretty much par for the course at that era, I think. You know,
I must admit, when I look back on it, I think if my father was still alive, it might have been a lot different because my father was fantastic with me. And I remember a lot of wonderful things that happened with my father prior to him being ill. It really was really something that I know that if Dad was still alive, it would have been easier coming out than what it was for me at the time.
But no regrets, obviously.
No regrets at all.
Absolutely not. So you've written here in the notes you've given me that you had your own landline radio station. Is this, this is the school one you were talking about?
No, this is one else? At home. We moved to Pascoe.
Home landline radio station. Now, what's one of those?
We had wires running down the back fence right along the whole of Mitchell Parade, and we wired all the different people up, and we had our own landline radio station.
So how many listeners did you have? How many houses did you wire up?
About 25 to 30 at the time. I was very young. Don't forget, I was only about 16, 17.
Yeah.
We got it all going, and we did quite well. And then, as I said, the Barry came along, and the gay life came along, and it was sort of
like, I was just fascinated at somebody sort of going out and wiring up all the neighbours and broadcasting to them.
Well, we couldn't transmit. We weren't allowed to transmit.
No, but you...
I knew about how to do that sort of thing at the time, and because a friend, Clark Sinclair, was doing it down at St Kilda. And
were there many of these little sort of personal radio stations around the place?
Not that I knew of.
No, I've never heard of any of them. I didn't even know you could do this.
Oh, well, you did.
I suppose if you've got the technical savvy.
Yes, you can get it done.
Where did you get the technical know-how from to do all this?
It was just built in, for a better way of putting it.
Yes?
Yeah, it was just something I could do and did it quite well. I also was trained as an electrician, but that had nothing to do with it, really.
Well,
that was
still
sparky.
Wires.
So still wires, but I
shows how much I know.
I got tired of the wires very quickly because I wanted to be in radio.
you definitely got a creative urge there that you had to satisfy somehow.
Yes. I set up this particular radio station. We ran it for 2 or 3 years, and all the boys, all different mates, all got involved with it. They weren't gay. Some of them were, I found out, in the later years. But no, we had a good time.
And the other very gay profession you dabbled in for a while, you were an interior decorator.
Yes, that's right. At that stage, I decided, no, I'm not going to be an electrician anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. Threw it all in and learnt how to do internal decorating. So I worked for there and did all that, and I've got a bit of a flair for it all, and
that's terribly gay, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yes, but I didn't realise at the time until I met my boss, and then I realised, oh, well, he's gay.
Again, the creative streak coming through.
Yes,
though.
That's right.
Do you still sort of are you one of these people who redecorates your own home every few years?
Oh yes. Yes, I'm shocking for it. My last episode was painting the whole house through, putting new tiles in the kitchen and family room, and virtually remodeling the house for something to do.
Maybe you should get into the property business, John. Buy up old properties and do them up and sell
them
at a profit.
I could do quite well.
I'm sure you could.
I've done more than that. I've put an old extension onto the house, and I've built a house too.
You sound like a friend of mine in the UK. He's always saying the house will be finished next year, but when it is, he moves and starts on another one. The current one now, he's been claiming he's never going to leave. He's been there for about 8 years, and I don't think there's a single brick in it that's the original brick.
I know the feeling.
More or less completely demolished it from the ground up, putting underfloor heating, putting solar panels on the roof, everything
in
between.
Yeah. Well, I've got
because I can't move.
Where I am, it's a very, very, very good location, the Three L's, and it's something that I'm not in a rush to do. I was at one stage going to sell and move on, but I decided not to for several reasons. But the biggest is the three L's, because it's so located to everything and anything I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Except joy. It's a bit of a train trip.
Well, yes, I'm in the same boat. You know, I'd be spend more time here if I didn't live in Eltham.
Mm.
You know, but I love living in Eltham.
I love living in Frankston.
It's a gorgeous place. Now, but the main thing you did job-wise was working at Safeways. Now, I'm sure you've got lots of stories about what happens in Safeway.
Yes. we're not going to go there.
But we'll not go there. Well, at least not for a moment or two, because we do have some more music to get through today, and you've got such nice choices. I want to get through all of them if we possibly can. Now we're coming a bit more up to date, and now we've got the Pet Shop Boys and New York City Boy. Pet Shop Boys, a favourite of yours?
Absolutely, I got every album.
Everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord! So why this particular track? Something about New York City Boys?
Yes.
Any New York City boy in particular? Or
No. I just like it. And one day I would have liked to have gone there, but I can't anymore now. So
you've not been to New York?
No, I can't go there anymore. I want to go, but for medical reasons I can't go.
No more. I have to get to see if we can get a cruise ship for you.
I'll do that.
Get you across that way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that.
It'd be just as much fun as actually getting there, I should think. Cruising all the way over in the style of the old Queens, if you'll pardon the expression.
And up at the bow.
Oh, please. No, not Titanic. Please. No, not going there. Okay, let's have this piece of music then. We've got Pet Shop Boys and New York City Boy. And this is Digging Deeper this hour with John Oliver, the founder of Joy 94.9. We've just had him through a couple of rather gay careers, including a stint in interior decoration. And, well, I don't know what's particularly gay about Safeway, but he doesn't want to go to Safeway, so we'll leave Safeway out of the equation for the moment.
Safeway was a really great few years, and it was 12 years altogether. And
that's a long time.
Yes, but I didn't just do one thing there. No. I did the PR work with Bill Pratt and all of them, and Leith Pratt, to promote the new store openings, and I got on the PA and did all that.
So they let you off the checkouts from time to time.
Yeah, I was the checkout chick. Not a check. I was the supervisor at one stage of all the checkouts at Forest Hill.
Yeah.
And I also, I went into the food area with the delicatessens and several deli managers. Then I used to set up all the new delis and set them all up to when they started. And was a supervisor for the delicatessens for a while. So it was quite involved.
And I think it's fair to say that you like your food.
Yes, I do. I do like my food, but I've given up cheese these days. I'm not allowed to have that anymore.
And speaking as a bit of a foodaholic myself, I think it would be a very tempting job to be in charge of a delicatessen.
Well, it is, and it's very interesting. And you meet all the people that come up to you, the shoppers, and we used to have a very gay time at Bentley. They used to come and just watch the staff and myself camping it up like a row of tents and having a wonderful time.
I must say, supermarkets are, well, both the Eltham supermarkets, for example. I've met quite a few listeners of Joy working in both supermarkets. So, yes, definitely a gay place to be. So, let's take it on a little few years. We're getting down now to about the 1980s, and you were living in Marulbark. So you'd left your previous boyfriend by then?
Yes, oh yes, well and truly. The dust had gone and settled and flooded away, and that took 10 years, and then at the end of the 10 years, glad to get rid of him.
No, it's not very nice.
Well, you know, it was a little bit rough near the end.
Relationships are difficult to end.
Yeah, well,
and I don't think two parties in a relationship ever quite want to end at the same time.
Well, we had a home together. I'd bought a flat. We'd bought a flat together, which was a big mistake. He went off the tracks doing things that I didn't think was appropriate, and I put the place up onto the market, and he gave it the nod when he shouldn't have. So anyway. That's history. It's finished.
So much history. But now you met a new one.
Ian.
Now, how did you meet Ian?
Member 30. I met Ian, he was hitchhiking. going home to Croydon. And I turned around and I thought, oh, poor thing, he's walking in all this heat. I'll give him a lift. So I did. And he just got to talking to me. And I didn't even put the gay thing in my mind about it or that side of it at all. And he started talking to me and we decided to catch up because he was the only – he's very young and he was only new to Melbourne. He'd come from Adelaide and left his parents. And we got to talking and he told me all about why he left and all the rest of it. And and it worked out that, yes, he was gay.
I think your gaydar must have been working even at an unconscious level.
Yes, I think it might have been, yeah.
That's such a stereotypical gay thing, picking up a hitchhiker.
Well, I mean, I did feel sorry for him at the time. He's carrying these heavy bags and he looked so miserable and so unhappy, so I thought I'll give him a lift. Well, and I very rarely do that.
Well, that's very romantic.
I think it's the only time I did it.
That's very romantic anyway, isn't it? So you were living down in Muralbark at that point.
Yes, I had my own home or unit in Muralbark at the time and hated it.
you're always sort of well out of the city, though.
Yes, well, I was at Muralbark, but I really didn't like it because there was no water there. And I realised that we had to move because I wanted to be beside the water or near the beach.
You want to be near the sea?
Got to be near the sea.
Yeah.
I'm a sea bunny, so I'm a bit of a fish. I don't know. But anyway, I like to be near the sea. And my mother had moved down to Frankston, and I decided to build a house at Frankston and moved to Frankston. So I decided that and did that. And
now, Frankston doesn't get a very good rap, does it?
Well, I don't think people really know Frankston how... I would know Frankston in the sense that it's...
I mean,
it's
we hear all these jokes about Frankston and Ugg boots and moccasins and
it's very unfair. And it's very unfair.
I've never seen you wear moccasins.
No, no. I think it's very unfair because, yes, there is that trend in all...
Of course.
All suburbs. I've even seen it at Footscray, Coburg, Pascoe, and everywhere. And I mean to say, even in Toorak. But, I mean... Everyone's got a little bit of something in each suburb, and okay, it's there. But where I live and where I'm, what I do around Frankston, I very rarely see it.
Yeah,
that's a lovely area.
Yeah, well, it's just weird the way certain suburbs get a rep and then hard to shake kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Frankston's one of the last places off to really price hike on houses. It's very low, and it has been low for quite a long while, but it's just starting to tick off now and grow a bit now.
Well, I think that's at least as much a function of its distance from the city, isn't it, as anything else.
It's... No, it only took me 45 minutes to get up here. It's quicker to come up here by train and tram then come up by car.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And cheaper.
I'm sure it is. I wouldn't tackle that journey by car. I have done it.
No, I have too.
I've visited people down there, but I certainly wouldn't like the idea of commuting up from there on a regular basis. Well, I suppose I could cope with it on the trains and that, but certainly not on the roads.
On the roads, I've driven up many occasion, but coming into the physical city of Melbourne, it is a little bit difficult because you pay, you know, quite a lot to park the car, and it really is cheaper and better to come up by public transport.
So there you are, nice and cosy down in Frankston, by the sea, you know, with the beach to hand should you require it, and radio rears its head again.
That's right, 3RPP.
No, what is 3RPP?
Radio Port Phillip, community radio station.
It's another community radio station. Radio Port Phillip, based in Mornington.
That's right.
What did you do there?
You name it, I did it. Production, I did voiceovers, I did a breakfast program for 5 years every day of the week. I got the breakfast program with the news in it. We had conversation about different things that were happening on the peninsula. We of course didn't touch the gay side because that just wasn't on then. So anyway, we tripped around it all and had a wonderful time at 3RPP for nearly 6-7 years.
And then from there you came back to Melbourne for a bit.
Yes.
And joined Southern FM.
Yep. I joined Southern FM and I was there for around about 2 years doing a program with a couple of friends who were gay.
And this leads us directly on into the foundation of joy.
Mm.
So what made you come up with the idea of a gay radio station?
I had this bug, and I was trying to work out what was the right way to go about it all. And I decided that we haven't got a voice. We needed to promote Midsummer. We needed to be able to discuss HIV and AIDS. We had to have helped the youth to find a glitch in their lives, get on with their lives, be able to be involved in doing something that they might like to do. Careers for people in the gay community if they wanted to be involved with radio or television.
Did you try to start any gay programs on any of the stations you were at, or was that?
Yes. On Southern FM, I went to set up to do World AIDS 92.
This is World AIDS Day.
World AIDS Day 92. Yeah. And they kicked up a bit about it. We don't want gay bashing. We don't want all this sort of thing on air. And I said, no, we are able and we should be allowed to have it on because it is important that we have it on. And I went to the committee of management and told them that they've got a choice. Either let us have it on or I'll take it to the ABA.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we were allowed to do that. That's what it was all about.
Sure.
So we ended up having the program on, and two friends of mine said to me after, when are we starting a radio station for the gay community, John? I said, oh, well, we'd better get off my bottom and do it.
Yeah, because obviously you had a bit of a struggle. And when you have a bit of a struggle with someone with a radio station trying to get something up, you obviously felt that it was, you know, it would be easier in a way to go and make a radio station your own than keep fighting with them.
Yeah, yeah. And I just felt that it was important that I felt that we needed a voice for the community at large, and it was about time someone did something about it. And I had a lot of experience being able to set things up and do things, so I decided to move on and start Joy.
Okay, well, we'll talk about what you did and how you did it in just a moment, but let's take a wee bit of more music here. Monkey Suit, Elton John and Leon Russell. Now, there's Leon Russell. There's a name I haven't heard for a long time.
No, he's very old, though. He's older than you and I, Doug.
He must be. He must be. I remember his records being around when I was a kid.
Yep.
Monkey Suit?
Yes, well, it's called Monkey Suit, the name of the track, and I liked it. And, of course, Elton John is the same age as me, born the same year as me, and in April.
And lived in the same borough as me in London.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really interesting. Did you have a meeting?
No, I didn't, but we were about the same. Yeah, he went to a different school, but I actually had a friend of mine had a house opposite to where he used to live in Pinner when he was a boy. But no, I can't claim any kinship with him. I did meet Long John Baldry once.
Did you?
Yeah, because he rather liked my school uniform.
But
that's another story. He was another friend of Elton John's too. But this particular track, just because you like the track?
Yes, and it's Elton's new album. And I thought, no, I like the track. We'll pop that in and play it.
And a great, obviously, supporter of gay causes, raising that's money for HIV. Affectionately known, apparently, among his friends as Sharon, so I'm told. He's our dear Elton. Yeah. Well, here he is with Leon Russell, Monkey Suit. And we're digging deeper this hour with our founder, John Oliver. Now, we haven't talked very much about Joy. We've talked about John. That's the whole object of this hour, to go into the history before Joy came on the scene, but we really can't go without talking a little bit about Joy itself. We had a message in from another long, 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 long time member, Alan Smales, who says it's good to hear you back on air again, albeit for this brief moment. And he reminds you of the early days over that hardware shop in South Melbourne doing a Sunday morning hospital programme for AIDS hospital patients.
That's right.
Now, I remember the South Melbourne studios. It's not really all that long ago that we left. Mm. And as I was just saying to Anastasia, who's one of our trainees who's here in the studio with us today, you could have fitted the whole of that studio into the foyer of the studios we've got.
That's true.
However did you manage in those days?
In those days, well, we were only broadcasting weekends. That was the whole idea of it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it catered very well for what we were using it for. It was never meant to be a full-time broadcast station from there. It was time to move on when we finished having, well, when we got our full-time license, we were planning on moving to where we are now, something like this. And I just find that they struggled through for all those years down in South Melbourne, and it was a credit to everybody and anybody who was involved with Joy, because it was quite a task.
It was. And well, we had some very old equipment.
Oh, some very old equipment. I think it was older than me, some of it. The desk that we got from 3XY I found in a chook yard. But that's another story on its own. But I literally did. It was pigeons everywhere in an old chook yard, and the chooks weren't there anymore. But here's this huge big desk wrapped up in a tarpaulin, and we were bringing it to Joy, and we were going to put it to air.
Yeah.
And I thought, my God, is this ever going to work? It worked for all those years.
Yes, and I remember endless problems with our technical director at the time, perpetually having to rewire bits of it, and on one occasion getting very angry because someone spilled tomato sauce into it.
Yes, Jackie, but, you're a naughty girl.
But it survived a great deal, that panel, and so did South Melbourne. Looking back on it now, I mean, you see where we've come to at this point. I mean, obviously the station's had its ups and downs over the years. You've been here and you've been away from here. You've not been too much involved of recent years.
No, because of my health. And I decided to have a break and get on with the life of John Oliver and do a few things that I wanted to do. And with Joy, I really felt that it was important for everyone to play their part and get involved and do their thing at Joy, and not me being around all the time. It was best for me to stand back and let others take the reins and run the station and organise the station, because that's what it was set up for. It just wasn't for John Oliver's ego, far, far be it, but it was there to help people in all sorts of ways in life.
Well, it's done, I think, quite a bit of that, and I hope it's going to be doing it for a good many more years.
Well, so do I.
I'm glad you had your little baby, and I'm glad you've let it grow up and go, and I'm very glad to be part of it. But I think, you know, thank you, John, for having the idea and having the guts to sort of push it through in the first place.
Well, thank you, Doug, for having me on today.
You're more than welcome. We've got one last track to play. Before we do that, we've got to hear some messages, of course, but what's the very last track of yours we're going to hear?
Kylie, of course.
Of course. Of Who course. Else? So, all the lovers from Kylie, her current single, I think I'm right in saying. Mm. And thanks for spending this hour with us, John Oliver.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, everybody.
Dance. It's all I want to do, so won't you dance? I'm standing here with you, why won't you move? I'll get inside your groove, because I'm on fire, fire, fire.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.